Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
All right, welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast.
It's just 5 minutes later.
It's 5 minutes later from the last episode, but we are still going strong. So maybe you took
a
couple days off.
I actually think you're trying to avoid me from meeting Caroline.
Yeah, maybe you took a couple days off to get to this episode. Maybe you heard the last one and you skipped this one, or I don't know. But we're back. Dr. Tarun Agrawal, T-Bone is in the house still.
I'm in the office.
We're in the office. We're having a good time recording, and
that's very geeky, by the way, that this is a good time for us.
That's it. I know.
By the way, way too much pizza last night. I did not feel good last night.
I told you.
I cannot believe you let me do that.
2019 for me is eating when I'm not overeating.
Listen, I've been very good about that until last night.
The best part about it is what sucked for you is you didn't have any pizza left over for lunch. I had two pieces for lunch left over.
I wouldn't have ate it for lunch anyway.
You were two pieces too
much.
I
went to this place called Brown Bag Cafe or something down at Cool Springs. It was good.
Nice. Yeah, kind of like a meet and three or something like that.
I have no idea.
Okay. Let's rock and roll. So, one of the big things that you always discuss, which, and I got to give you a little credit for this. Sometimes I give you credit for things. Sometimes you think you deserve credit, but you really don't.
Okay.
But
sometimes you just steal and don't give me credit.
One thing that is worth giving you credit that is so important for, and I think young dentists are actually, I got to give us millennials credit. I think we recognize it. I don't think we necessarily know what it means, but is the difference between running your practice and running your practice as a business. So when we look at, okay.
Well, I think you're incorrect in that statement. You're not clear in that statement a little bit.
Okay. Well, what do you think I need to be clear? Clarify my statement.
Well, you should always run your practice as a business.
Right. And
if you want it to survive and do well.
But what I mean by that maybe is maybe look wearing two hats.
Okay, sure. But that, okay. So really what you're asking me is the difference between a dental practice and a dental business.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, sure.
Or just being a practitioner and being a business owner.
Well, they go...
To me, that's the two hats, right?
That's the two hats of a practice.
Right.
No matter what. Okay? So if you have a dental practice, your hat number one, and I think me and Chuck talked about this on a podcast once, hat number one is you, the clinician. You, the employee. You, the associate of your practice.
Okay? What's that book that talks about the... talks about being like the engineer, the architect, and the... Whatever. It's a very famous business book. I'm surprised you don't know this. Okay. Someone is going, they're naming the book right now, but we can't hear you. So
I have no earthly idea. Okay. So you're right. Your thought process is correct, Sully, but you're not giving the full picture of it. Okay. This is where you're trying to copy me and you're not disseminating the information
maybe it's
properly.
Better.
Okay. Maybe it's possible, right? Unlikely, but possible. When you have a dental practice, you're going to be the clinician and you're going to be the business owner / leader. Okay. That you're always going to be both. No matter what, you're going to be both, unless you're an associate. And I would argue even as associate, you got to be a business person because you want to grow as an associate. But I would always say you're that. But what I want to see happen in our profession is I want to see more of us move towards having a dental business and not just a dental practice. And those are two different things to me. And being a business person in your practice is a given, but owning and running a dental business is very different.
And I'm assuming you're not talking about, before we lose all the listeners who don't want to own multiple practices.
I'm against multiple practices.
Let me back up.
I'm not against multiple practices.
But you're not, my point is though, is you're not advocating when you say a dental business about building a
conglomerate.
Right. That's not
necessarily. No, absolutely not. Okay. Absolutely not. In fact, so I had this conversation at lunch today with my Iraqi friend.
Nice. Okay,
which I can't wait to record with him tomorrow.
Oh, fantastic.
we were talking about, he says, I feel like I should own multiple practices because my friends are doing it.
Is he a dentist?
He is.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And so I said to him, I said, why do you want to own multiple practices? He said, other people are doing it. They seem to be doing great at it.
That's how I feel too, though, sometimes. I'm like, yeah. I should go buy it. Everybody's doing it.
So here's what I say. I say, in generally speaking, it's relatively easy to own a second practice. Okay. Yeah. It's relatively easy to own a third or fourth practice. Okay. The rubber meets the road when you grow beyond four. Okay. So a person that says, oh, I'm a multiple practice owner and I got two or three practices, I don't put a lot of credence in what they're saying. Okay. When somebody gets beyond the four, when they get into five, six, seven, eight, that's a different story.
They've figured out something that's allowed them to scale.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, this all comes back to the why. Okay. Look, I'm going to argue till the day I die that if you want to have two practices, you're better off having one.
Well, and so let's talk about that. I know not necessarily what we talk about, but I think this is a good discussion right here to some degree nip in the butt, because I totally agree with you. What is the profitability of it? Because the profitability of two practices most likely is not necessarily, I mean, you've now doubled your overhead, you've doubled all these other things, you've doubled the drama, the team.
You've reduced your culture.
I mean, there's so many negatives to two practices.
Yeah. So, you know, listen, this goes back to my thing. If you're interested in multiple practice ownership, barring being in a town of 4,000 people, you know, or something along those lines, you're better off having a single location larger.
And is the reasoning, is it money that people run after to get, is that why they want multiple practices? Is it easier money?
So the multiple practices, the people that are doing it for the right reasons are doing it because they want to have an exit plan.
So it's a scalable model to sell.
When I say the right reason, it's not about doing the right type of dentistry.
It's for the business right reasons.
The business right reasons is they're building it to scale and sell.
Correct.
Okay. Or the billing to scale and sell 20 years from now when they have 800
offices.
Because
in theory, the other right reason, when we talk about kind of maybe just like the feel-good clinical, it probably does make a lot more sense to build one more, what we would call like a mega practice or one big practice.
So, you know, I think, I'll give you the example I gave my Iraqi friend, okay, is, I need to remember his name real quick.
Yeah.
And that's not nice. Okay. It's not nice. I liked him a lot. His name was Anas Zain.
Okay.
Unbelievable story, man. You've got to listen to my episode with him because
soon, T-Bone Speaks Podcast.
Dude, he lived in Baghdad.
T-Bone and his Iraqi friend.
He was born and raised in Baghdad.
Wow.
Okay. And he didn't move here till 7 years ago. He lived a year and a half without electricity during all the craziness in Baghdad.
Yikes.
Like, everybody lived. It's not like he chose to live.
How big is Baghdad, by the way?
I have no earthly idea, dude. I've never been
because
there.
That's my
I'm avoiding it.
Well, I understand that. Me too. But my curiousness is to live without electricity. Like, when the ship was going down in Baghdad. But, like, is that, like, the size of, like, you know, Nashville or, like, Chicago or, like, New York or, like...
It's not the size. It's the equivalency. It's the equivalency.
No, but I'm thinking about square footage because it's the size it is.
Square footage, it's bigger than all those cities.
So it's a big city.
Dude, Baghdad is the equivalent of New York.
But still, like, living
just
in
with only two-story buildings that are all crumbled now.
Living in New York during a time when it was getting bombed for a year and a half with no electricity would be terrifying.
Exactly. Living anywhere
that's getting bombed is terrifying. Electricity or no electricity.
Exactly. So I can't wait to have this episode. What were we talking about before this?
Business.
Okay,
versus practice
minded. So I was talking to him, and I said to him, okay, so let's use fake numbers. Let's go to what I considered to be the holy grail that I no longer consider to be the holy grail was having $1 million practice.
Right.
Okay. So I made it when I had $1 million practice. Okay. And then I said, oh, I should do this a second time. Right. And my dad looked at me. I mean, I give a lot of credit to my dad. Okay. And he looked at me and he said, don't you think you could just build your practice to 2 million and make more money?
Yeah.
Like, and I said, you're exactly right.
The profitability is
He says, what would it take to do that? He goes, well, I would need, a little bit more space, blah, blah, blah. And he said, well, we can advance hours, blah, blah, blah. And because the truth is growing from 1 million to 2 million has a overhead of about 45%.
So we don't have time to do it now, but that's a great podcast episode we should discuss sometimes. Because there are a lot of doctors out there who are 800,000,
really have to do tonight,
so. 1 million, et cetera. How do you get from a $1 million practice to a $2 million practice? But
you got to listen to my last episode.
Yeah. No, that's good.
That's the why.
When you say your last episode, you mean my last episode that you were on.
Whatever you want to call it. It all blurs together now.
I just want our listeners to be clear where to find that last episode.
Listen to my episode on Millennial Dentist, my guest episode on whatever it is, okay? So I'm still a believer. So back to your original question is, why do people want to have two practices? They're being misled.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Number two.
It looks flashy.
Number two, I think they think there's more money in it, which is there's not. Because if there's not money in the one you got, there's not going to be money in the second one.
Well, two practices with 80% overhead are, you know.
Still 80% overhead, yeah. I think the other reason, and probably the main reason that people try to do two practices is they're terribly unhappy in the practice they got. And there's a belief, and I went through this in my own career, there's a belief that I can just start over and it'll be, I'll do it right there. I won't make the same mistakes. And the problem is you do the same things because, in fact, it's, in my opinion, it's probably even worse because you're there less. Okay.
And you're probably the problem.
Yeah. Well, maybe not, but you're just there less. You know, I mean, it's a culture. I mean, you know. Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You're the problem, meaning, and I'm not saying you, I'm saying
I know.
The person in general, because if you're not taking, it does stop with you. And so if you're not resetting the culture or dealing with the issues or dealing with whatever it is to get it right, you know, it is your problem. And so if you're not going to do that on the one practice, what's going to make you do it on the second practice?
Sometimes I can buy into a second practice. Every situation is not black and white. It's gray. Let's say you live in Timbuktu and you want to do... Let's say you live in a place where the average age of the person is 25. I don't know if a place like that exists. Maybe a college campus. Yeah. Okay. But there's still teachers and professors there. And let's say you want to do hybrids.
Auburn.
Okay. Maybe, let's say you want to do hybrids.
Okay.
Maybe you need a second location for such a thing. Okay. Yeah. Or say you want to do dentures. You know? You probably need a second location to do
that
something
makes sense.
Like that.
That makes
you
sense. Know? Okay.
What I'm talking about building a dental business, actually, the line I used to use is building a business that is around the culture of you. Okay. Because to me, there's no point in growing, in my world at least, if it loses you or who you are, what you want, your personality, your culture. You don't want to walk in one day and be like, what the hell has happened to this place?
Yeah.
You know? And so that's a challenge, you know? So that to me, it's about building a business that doesn't lose the culture. Now, what is a dental business? Not being a business person as a practice owner, but what is a dental business? A dental business is something to me that as an owner gives you ability to take almost unlimited vacations. Essentially, it operates without you. Okay. And it's all about flexibility to me. Okay. So the flexibility there is about being able, because how many times, so let me ask my listeners. Okay. Your listeners.
Okay. Our listeners.
Let's ask the listeners. Okay. How many times have you closed your eyes and said, I wish I could just do the type of procedures I like to do? How many times have you said, I wish I could just work the hours I want to work? I wish I could just take more time off of work. I wish I didn't have to see this patient.
But it may even be, I wish I could just see this many patients.
Whatever it is.
Or, you know, yeah. I wish I could get, because I think it works both ways. Like, it works, I wish I could have a full schedule for 4 days a week.
Yeah, whatever it is, I mean, right?
Yeah.
You know, so to me, that's a dental business, because what has to happen, all of those questions that I just proposed to you are answered by having somebody else in your practice, okay? And when you bring in somebody else, you create a passive income stream, okay?
You're talking about an associate.
It could be a partner.
Or a partner,
yeah. Okay, but you bring an associate. I believe an associate, the associate model. In fact, what we're doing now is I've got an unbelievable associate, and Dr. Nathaniel Leedy's, love that guy. Love that guy. And the goal is for him to buy in 20-25%. And then the goal is for us to do this again and for the next person to buy in 20-25%. And then the next person to buy in for 20-25%. And my goal as the owner is to sell my practice 4 times.
Yeah. Which makes so much mathematical sense as an owner.
As it's a scalable business. you know, and what happens is I'm going to sell my practice instead of for 1x, I'm going to sell it for 2 or 3x.
How do you transition leadership at that point?
Well, it's a good question. I'll find out. You know, I think a lot of leadership happens when somebody has skin in the game. True skin in the game, in of itself, it happens. And I think also it's like a marriage. I mean, you know, I don't want to say this the wrong way or come across as in the wrong way. I mean, I'm offering him partnership because I think it's the right fit. I wouldn't just, how about this? If he was a great associate, but I didn't like him as a person, or I couldn't see myself working with him and doing business with him, it would be a no go.
Yeah.
So, you know, to me, the leadership part of it is, and quite frankly, the leadership matters a little bit less when you do what I'm doing, because my leadership matters the 3 days that I'm there or the 2 days that I'm there.
Well, that makes it, yeah, too. Okay? That's true.
So, you know, if you want to run the practice a little bit differently and you're an equity owner, if you're an associate, it's a different story.
Right. When you're,
you know, if you're an equity owner and you want to run things a little bit different on your couple of days, that's fine.
Because in some degree,
don't let it bleed into my schedule though.
Yeah.
This
will be interesting.
We'll
follow up on this in a year or two. See where we're at. This will be fun.
Well, what I mean by that is what we have to do is
it's hard to do.
Well, I don't think we're going to struggle with it. And here's why. I've gotten a lot of grief from you and others about how I'm very, very clear with associates about what works and doesn't work in my practice. And the benefit of that now is moving forward, I know I'm going to have a partner that we're on the same page.
Yeah. But the difference is when he was an associate, it was your way or the highway.
No, that's not true.
Well, no, I think that's not true at all, Sully.
That's how sometimes I make it feel, and that's how sometimes people perceive it. If you can convince me that it's a good idea, I'm all aboard.
That's hard to do, though.
Give me an example of something an associate wants to change.
I don't know. But rather than that, my point is that before, as an associate, it takes convincing you. As a partner, he doesn't have to convince you.
He still has to convince me. I'm still 75% owner.
Well, right. So that's the nice thing about.
How about this? For the first 6 months, it's my way or the highway.
Yeah.
Bottom line, I'm clear. But how about not even 6 months? The first 9 months, it's my way or the highway. And then you've earned the right to have a voice. You know, yeah. How about this? I asked Nate, and we're not even talking about what we want to talk about, but that's okay. But I asked Nate the other day, I go, what makes you like it here? He goes, I would never let an associate do endo and you let me do endo and ortho. I said, okay, no problem. You know, and he says you haven't, and see, he'll make a statement that you disagree with about me. He says you haven't limited me in what I can do.
Yeah, no, that's true. Well, and yeah.
Because you would agree, you would say, because our first conversation when we first met is I'm limiting people.
Right. And what I probably realized is it's, you limit the timeline with people. Absolutely. To some
same with you. When you know, in no, terms of speaking and stuff, right?
No, I get that. Yeah.
It's the timeline. That's right. It. I don't limit what you can do. You just have to earn the right.
And to some degree show that you have the capacity or the confidence or the consistency and the
sustainability.
Yeah.
It's not some shiny new object that you want to go try. Sure. So, but let's get back to the dental business versus the dental practice. The dental practice, at the end of the day, the average, you know, not shouldn't say average, a dental practice is going to have a ceiling. Okay, typically that ceiling is going to be in the $1.2, $1.3 million range. Okay, there'll be outliers that'll do $1.5, $1.6. There'll be crazy outliers that'll do a couple of million and all of that stuff. Okay, but the typical solo practitioner
is going to do, I think you nailed on that,
$1.2, $1.3 million. Yep. Okay, that's going to be the ceiling. And then the ceiling on a dental business is unlimited. Okay, your ceiling there is going to be facility related and procedure related. But so, for example, one goal that I've made for 2019 is to play golf every Tuesday afternoon with my son. Yes.
Nice.
Okay. If I were a solo practitioner, would I be able to do that?
Not very easily maintain the same production or whatever. Yes,
exactly. Right. But and how about this? Here's the other important point that we often forget as owners. I can afford to take time off, even if I was a practitioner, even if I was just a dental practice. But my hygienist probably wouldn't like having a half day less income. Well, my assistant wouldn't like having a half day less income.
So I switched them all to commission.
No, but but if you're not working and you're, I'm willing to produce less, they're going to make less, correct?
Yeah, that's true.
Or we make them produce the same amount less time.
I get that's a different conversation, right? But my point being, let's say I've hit my max.
Yeah.
Okay, let's say I've hit my max and I want to have Tuesday afternoons off now and I'm a solo practitioner. What is my team going to do? How many of us really want to pay them to sit around and do nothing?
No, I think you're exactly right. Okay. It's hard to do.
It's hard to do, right?
Well, and what I mean, you're exactly right. You can't take 2 weeks vacation. But it's very hard to do.
No,
your patients at some point are going to be like, I'm not dealing with this.
Patients are going to be an issue, but your team members is going to be an issue right. too, right?
And that's something that we don't think about as young people. We don't think about that at all.
We don't. And so that's
and
why.
Most dentists are not thinking, when you say Tuesday, the last thing they were thinking about was, well, what if my hygienist doesn't like that she's not going to get paid on Tuesday afternoons now?
But that's an important part.
That's how you lose good people. I totally agree with
you. You know what we're losing good people to now? I had this pop up in one of the forums. They said, I lost a great hygienist because she went to a place where she could work 7 to 3 nonstop.
Oh, wow.
She went to corporate practice where she could work 7 to 3.
If you put your socks on in the dark, you might put one on inside out.
So my response to him was then, that this should be a lesson that you have to compete and create an environment where people can have team-centric hours.
That's true. Okay. I like that. Oh, and that. And I would say even benefit other things. There's lots of things that go to that. Yeah.
You know, listen, I think what's lost on people, my age, your age, even older, is that we go through seasons of life. Okay. Sully, what's important to you in the last 6 weeks was probably not important to you 3 months ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very much so.
You know, and so our team members also have kids,
right.
Correct? And for them, you know, they may go through suddenly where, and most of our team members are not the primary earners in their family.
Sure.
Okay. Or not the sole earner in their family, right? So if my wife came to me and said, I can't pick up my kids, because, you know, I got to work till 5 o'clock. Well, just go find a job where you can get off at 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
You know, call it a day, right? So, you know, part of developing this dental business mindset, it's in fact, very little of it is based around money. And the vast majority of it's based around sustainability and creating a great lifestyle for yourself and everybody around you. And, you know, it became very clear to me in Pinehurst, the event you skipped, when we had 28 team members, okay, between my wife and I, we have 28 employees, and we had 54 people or so at our Christmas party.
Yeah, that's cool.
And that's not all the children either, correct?
Yeah.
So all in all, we own some responsibility for 70 to 90 people.
Yeah, that's cool.
Okay. Well, you can look at it as cool. I look at it as unbelievably scary.
Yeah.
I look at it as a lot of pressure. So when I make that decision that just because I make a lot of money and I want to work a day less, we forget about how it affects those 80 or 90 people in our life. We forget how it would affect those 80 or 90 people. And in the typical solo practitioner office with the typically 5 team members, so that's going to be on average about 15 to 20 people, husbands, boyfriends,
right.
Children's, illegitimate children's, whatever it is.
Sure. Okay?
We forget that just because you as the owner can afford to take a day off, it affects 20 other people. And then we wonder why we don't attract the best, how we don't retain the best. And so to me, these are the unseen benefits of becoming a dental business. Okay.
There are also some of the hardest parts about learning to be an owner too, and be a business owner. I mean, for me personally, you know, it's funny, having a kid is making me so much more sympathetic to my front office person who goes home and has a 2-month-old. And I'm like, you worked an entire day and you have to go home and take care of a
and more not likely, that farm. And there's another one. Cooks.
And cook. And
they don't have people to come clean their house like we do.
And then you're right. And then I would think of, you know, and I used to get annoyed when people would, when the kids would get sick or when, you know, when they have to leave or doctor's appointments, whatever, you know, it is funny how, you know, because the problem is at some point at the core, we're somewhat selfish human beings, right? You know,
and look, so, I'm selfish. I teach people to be. Listen, it's all about you. Right. You're the one that took the risk, that put the money out there, but then don't complain when things change.
Right. Okay. And so I've learned a lot in kind of how I've matured as a leader and an owner of our practice of trying to know my team members better and have that kind of, you know, because you're right. My success of this business and the sustainability you talk about and the growth you talk about and really taking it to the next level is because it's like, you know, like you mentioned, you are capped by yourself.
Your success is directly related to the competence
exactly.
and happiness That's of the people around you.
Yeah. And the higher you go,
the more important
it is. Yeah. Because it's now, you know, and we've talked about this.
It becomes a team-driven situation.
I mean, you can't, because at some point that when you get to size of a practice, it can't be solely supported by one doctor.
That's silly.
And then your success is totally driven on a, you know, that's why I get so ticked off at, you know, the associate model is so strong for just dentistry, for clinical, good, solid, patient-driven dentistry. But the problem is so many, you know, I call them senior doctors, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call it,
I consider them the risk-taking doctors.
Well, let's call them the risk-taking doctors. But the risk-taking doctor sometimes is so short-term sighted that they lose the reality that their long-term success is so much based on that associate's success.
Okay, so Sally, let me. I wrote this down somewhere today.
You can play devil's advocate because
I'm not going to play devil's advocate at all. I'm going to make an excuse for my generation. My generation, age 38 to 50.
Walked uphill in the snow.
I'm 43. Okay, we grew up in the era of solo practitioners.
Okay? Yes, you're right.
Okay. Your dad.
That's all you know.
Not all we know. That's all that we success. Wanted.
Yeah, yeah.
No, we purposely wanted that. And the times
were
different.
That's a very good point.
Okay. Look, when I started practice, when your dad started practice, there were no $250,000 in CAD CAM and cone beam.
And I guess there was no associate model back then either, really.
There were group practices to a certain degree, but you know, it was just a different time. So, it's short-sighted on your part. And I agree with you, by the way, okay? It's short-sighted on your part to say that we're not open to it because we were fundamentally ingrained in our mind.
Not to do it.
Not to do it. Okay.
That's a good point.
And so dentistry goes, it's a cycle. Okay. The 70s and early 80s were about group practices. The late 80s, 90s, early 2000s were about solo practitioners. The 2010s are going to be about group practices, multiple ownership. 2010, 2020s are going to be about group practices, multiple doctor practices. And then who knows what's going to happen in 2030. You know, I'm convinced, and I don't want to get too on tangent, I'm convinced we will see nurse practitioners and PAs in dentistry.
Yeah.
No, within my practice lifetime.
I agree.
Okay. And then the game's going to totally change.
Yeah.
Okay. Imagine that suddenly a nurse practitioner, PA, physician's assistant, dental, whatever it is, can now do fillings, prep, and everything.
Gosh, we would love that.
Well, we have a business mindset.
Right.
Right? Because we don't tie our success on dental school procedures.
You're exactly right. Gosh, that is such a... And it's funny when you say it like that, because... Conceptually, it seems so much bigger of a deal, but at its core, one of the biggest things that separates, I would say, really, really successful, you know, dentists and business owners versus others is the lack of, and you see it on Facebook all the time, the fear that gets put into people's eyes when they see Smile Direct Club or, you know, the fact that hygienists can doing that that terrifies them. And
it's
I'm like,
the beginning.
Who cares?
Well, it's not who cares. It's you believe that you can adapt to the environment.
Yes.
Okay. And I believe I can adapt to that environment too. So it's just the beginning. We're going to go through cycles, ups and downs. You know, we've been around long enough to see it. But to me, that's the importance of having a dental business. Okay,
and it's the importance to sticking to our bullet points.
Yeah, but let me give you some other examples about why you need a dental, because I want to focus on the what and why. Okay, not the how.
Okay.
Okay. Another reason why you need a business is I'm going to go to. Let's do a good picture if you're going to do it, okay?
Oh, yeah.
I don't want you to focus on my belly here, okay?
Well, Dad was like, are you still in the office? I was going to tell him, we'll post on Instagram.
When my father-in-law got sick on August the 8th, my wife went immediately. I went immediately. And we didn't think, you know, in the beginning of it, you don't think about anything else anyway.
Sure. Okay? You're going no matter what. Yeah.
But 2-3 weeks in, a month in,
yeah,
you start thinking about things, correct? And we were able to have carte blanche because A, we had a dental business. So we knew that maybe my practice didn't make any money. Okay. Maybe it lost a little bit, but it didn't stop.
Patients didn't go somewhere else.
No.
Team members didn't leave.
Yeah. I mean, team members got paid.
I mean, those are, so my question, because that's a great point. That's unbelievable flexibility that you built in your practice by looking at it from a business standpoint.
I want to say one thing, okay? I think words are unbelievably important, okay? I try to avoid using the word freedom.
Keep going.
I don't believe we're trying to create freedom.
Too much. You need slack.
Okay. I don't think we're trying to create freedom. I think we're trying to create flexibility. Flexibility gives us choices to do what we want to do. And so, you know, that's important to me, is that we want to, everything, I've done a poor job of explaining why I've done what I've done, partly because a lot of it's happened by accident.
Sure.
I can go back and dissect it.
It's hard. Dad talks a lot sometimes about, like, you know, even clinically how you do things. It's sometimes hard to, like, look back at how you learn things because,
why? You can dissect it after it happens, right?
So when, you know, this is conceptually, this is a lot of really good stuff. Where do you start because there's so many dentists.
Give me the scenario, Sully.
Super excited young dentist. Mm-hmm. I have a practice.
I own the practice.
We're doing 750, 800,000. I'm trying to get my team on board. I'm trying to figure this out. I want to do all this. What are the steps that you start to take to get you over that hump? Because in some instances, the hardest part, I think, is getting over the hump. You know, because once you're over the hump, that allows one of the biggest stumbling blocks for some people, which is the fear of having enough money, to then be able to look into. When do you start to have this business-minded mindset, right from the gate?
No, it's not. Listen, it's
I know it's not black and white. I know it's the right answer, but just walk through.
But it's not easy. It's easy to say right from the gate, but right from the gate, you're just worried about surviving.
Right. So let's talk about survival mode a little bit, because I think that's where a lot of dentists are, and they're like, "This is all awesome," but I'm just trying to survive.
Okay. So yeah, that's one of the points I want to make. Okay. So I think the sweet spot to really start thinking about this is that $800,000 ballpark. Okay. Because at that point, you should be netting a couple of hundred grand.
Correct.
Okay, you really should.
Because if you're at 700 grand, or let's do 800 grand, it's easier math for me, and it's 60%, that's like 200 and some grand.
That's not how I look at things, but if you're at $800,000 as a dentist, typically you're going to be doing about 600 grand of that. You should be getting paid as an associate 180 grand. And more than likely, at 800 grand, you're not going to have a 20% margin. You'll probably have about a 5 to 10% margin.
Well, let's go even back even further, because I think it's very important to get a little bit kind of at a level of just super simplicity here, of clarity, for instance. Okay, so let's start with how you pay yourself as an owner, because I think that's a great place to start.
This is where I was going to go.
Well, of course, that's where I'm leading us. So
the first, okay, so you asked the question of how do I get started?
Yes.
Okay, how and when do I get started? Okay.
Okay.
The first, let me finish. Have you noticed I've interrupted you a lot less, right?
I know. 2.1. Yeah. We've worked out some of the kinks. We had a quick bug update. Now we're moving on.
Oh, God. The first step to developing a dental business is to create some flexibility in your life.
Okay.
Okay. And what I mean by that is you have to not have a spending problem. Okay. You have to create some financial margin. And that way you can take these risks. Okay. Because all of it's a risk.
And what you would tell me is that early on, it's less of a financial problem. It's more of a spending problem than an income problem.
Yeah, listen, I don't know very many dentists that can't go out and make $120,000
to $150,000. I 100% agree.
Okay, so in that dollar amount, even with your outrageous loans that you have.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Let's call it
$3,000 a month
in loans. $3,000 a month in loans, okay.
That's fine.
So that's 3 times 12 is $36,000.
Let's call that $50,000 in income. You got to pay taxes before you can pay that. Okay, so there's still a lot of margin left. And I think what happens is we get into the mindset of as we earn more, we spend more. And that's your first problem. You get the handcuffs. Yep. Okay. And then what happens is to go into dental business mode or to go into any growth mode, then at that point, it becomes a risk that you're unable to take, unwilling oftentimes, and then unable to take. Okay, so that's the philosophy I want to impart on people. Okay, number one is you've got to create financial margin in your life, and you got to live underneath your means.
Yeah. Okay. Step one. I think that really is step one.
Step one is you got to learn live underneath your means. Okay.
Which starts even as an associate. I mean, you can do that from the gate.
It starts as a child.
Yeah.
Okay. If we want to go back.
We're millennials, so we didn't start that early for us. It didn't at least start till maybe college.
So as much as I make fun of you guys for living in your basement, if that means going to live in your parents' house, go live in your parents' house.
Okay? Yeah. Well, sure.
So the second part of it, and probably the true first step in the business, is to treat it like a business. Okay. And the first thing that I did that started giving me clarity about what my business was doing, or the business part of my practice at that time, was I paid myself as an associate. Okay. That's also the first step to being able to replace yourself. Okay. Yeah. So in other words, is there enough meat on the bone after I pay myself as an associate that I could literally put somebody else in here
and not even work?
Yeah. Because then I can start taking some risks.
Yeah. Because there's margin. So walk through exactly how you do that.
So depending on your area, okay, so I assume Nashville is very similar to Raleigh, North Carolina. Typical associate pay is 30%. Okay. So I pay myself 30% of what I personally collect.
Okay.
On my column. Yep. Okay. In my practice management software, what it pops out, I pay myself 30% of that. I pay myself a draw, my base pay. $500, $800, $10,000 a day, whatever the number is, okay, and or up to 30% of what I actually produce. So it allows me to start creating the mentality of what my business actually does. And then I learned to live on no more than what I got paid as an associate myself.
All right.
Okay.
And when you say live on, are you including savings?
That's part of living to me.
Well, we
have to come back to that. Okay, I don't want to muck up the conversation. Okay.
Yeah, I give you
so,
that.
So let's just focus on right now survival mode. Okay, because truthfully, 120 grand, as while it sounds like a lot of money, that's survival mode for most dentists.
No, I agree.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree.
If you walk out with $300,000 to $400,000 in debt,
and you have a mortgage and stuff like that,
I would argue that was your choice.
Okay, but still,
okay, yeah. You can live in an $800 apartment. Okay, unless you're in New York.
Wait till you meet my wife. Yeah. In our apartment was not an option.
Well, those are familial marital issues, correct? But, you know, but part of that is also that me and Mona had to have tough choices.
That's a good point.
Okay. Yeah. You know, my wife, she grew up well off. Not rich. I mean, not wealthy, but she didn't want
for
anything.
She didn't have to want for,
She didn't want for anything, okay? But when we got married, she married a dentist. Okay,
in her family, where everyone was doctors, and you was like a downgrade.
I was a downgrade, but now I'm an upgrade. we lived in an apartment. And I told her that we're going to live in an apartment for 3, 4, 5 years.
How long did you live in an apartment? Was it a couple years?
It was, we rented a townhome. We were in a rental situation for 4 years. Nice. Okay. And, our apartment was, $1,000 a month, I think.
Cause it does feel like, and that was so long ago, obviously we'd have to count in inflation and whatnot.
So it might be $1,100 today. Okay.
but my point is, yeah. is that's a great point because even that little thing is something that it feels like so much of our generation.
So here's the argument people are going to give me that I want to rebuke.
They're going to say the whole, yeah, wasting money, putting money down the drain.
Yeah. But what I'm going to say is what you're not counting is flexibility.
Yeah. Which is huge.
Yeah. But once you have a mortgage, you're tied to it.
Yep.
Okay. You're tied to selling it, getting rid of it, all of those things. I could literally, going back, I could have said, you know, I don't like this town. I want to move.
And really, it doesn't make sense for you to buy a house before you buy a practice. Because there's arguments for and against it, but at the core of it, if you don't know where you're going to practice long term until you've made a financial commitment to that, you tie up flexibility is huge.
I don't disagree with what you're saying, but some people don't want to own.
Right.
Okay. And it's okay to buy a practice if you don't own. Okay. But you have clarity about where you're going.
Sure.
Okay. You know, I
think everybody should own. You don't have to necessarily run them, but you can hire people to help.
I don't think everybody should own.
Well, that's another conversation for another day.
Right. I think some people are dumb to own, to be quite frank with you. They'd make more money as an associate in the right scenario. But what were we talking about?
I don't know.
See, this is the problem, dude. I gave you notes.
You did give us notes. Hello? Hello? I could have sworn someone was here.
Well, get your gun, man. This is Tennessee.
It's Nashville. Watch out.
So that's the first step is you pay yourself as an associate, you find out how much meat is on the bone. Okay. And what most people will find out at the $800,000 level, especially in your audience, is that there's no meat on the bone. In fact, I would argue that most startups and I consider practice acquisition still startup phase. Okay. You're just paying for the cash flow.
Sure.
Is that they probably can't pay themselves as an associate.
Gotcha.
North of 50%. And this is just a guess on my part, okay? North of 50% can't afford to pay themselves as an associate.
So a great exercise for listeners is to, you know, is to look at this, to either start doing it or run the numbers and
You got
to
start doing it.
In theory, you can backlog it too and see, okay, here's what I should have been paying myself if I was doing this for the last 6 months. Here's what I've taken. Where does the math come
and
out
I
to
actually
see?
Pay myself monthly a different number.
I think it'd be good to see. What do you mean you pay yourself a different number?
I mean, I pay myself quarterly or whatever. I take a base draw.
Sure.
And then if I have a great quarter, I get more money.
Yeah.
If I have a bad quarter, I get less money.
Yeah.
You know, because then you start treating it mentally like a business, and then you can start making good decisions. Okay. So that's the first step. So if you go through that exercise and you don't have any margin there for you to take risk, okay, then you're not ready to move into business mode. Your goal then is to create to treat your practice like a business. Then you got to be in optimization mode, or maybe it's practice, you know, maybe it's clinical growth mode, whatever it is to get it to where you have some meat on the bone. Okay. So then you're ready to start taking some risks at that point. Okay. So one of the things that Chuck and I are doing on the T-Bone Speaks podcast is we're going to do a 3-part series on associates. And we believe, and Chuck, you know, is a Patterson rep, sorry, dental supplier rep, with Patterson, but, and calls on lots of practices. We have come to the conclusion that, generally speaking, $1 million is when somebody should get serious about bringing in an associate,
yeah,
a second provider. Okay. 1.2 is the sweet spot, but when you're at 1 million is when you should start thinking about it, okay? And one of the things that I was guilty of is that I waited to be ready. And one of the things of a good business is that you prepare for your future. So you have to start getting an associate before you're ready, and then you create your readiness. And so that's part of what I would also recommend to people is, one, start treating your practice like a business. See if there's a margin left over. Two, when you hit the point that if you say, oh my God, I need an associate, it's not too late. It's just you're reacting too late. Yeah. Okay. So you have to start looking forward, focus, medium term thinking. Okay. And then you have to start thinking about, I'm ready for an associate. What does it look like? 2 days a week, 3 days a week, 5 days a week, whatever it is. And then you start going into replacing yourself.
What do you think the fastest way is to optimize your practice?
It's not saving on supplies or saving on implants or saving on those things.
So
it's not printing your own aligners.
So, and obviously,
it's not printing your own guides.
What you're getting at is, you know, somewhat of a mindset difference between.
Well, how about this? Okay. Let me say this. Okay. Let's say you have minimal profitability after you pay yourself as an associate. Okay. And the truth is,
because a lot of people that are listening are going to be right there. They're going to be right on the number or right there. And they're kind of like, sweet, I'm 400 grand from, I still don't feel great. I'm still not super comfortable.
I'm making $20,000 on my business.
Yeah.
I pay myself as an associate well, but then I got a little bit left over. And then I'm telling you to optimize that. Okay.
So yeah.
And the tendency, and it's truthful. Okay. I mean, this does work. The tendency is to look at how I can save myself
to get leaner,
to get profitable. Leaner is not necessarily saving yourself. Leaner may be getting rid of people.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Sometimes cut margins.
Sometimes you need to do that. Sometimes you have a bad team member or a non-performing team member. That's one thing. Okay. That's smart business to me. Okay. Smart business is not printing your own aligners to save money.
Is smart business growing into a team overhead issue or cutting a team overhead to fix a team overhead issue?
Well, I think look, I'm not an expert on this, so I don't want people to think my word is
but
I think I don't believe in cutting great people.
Yeah.
Okay. If you have good people,
I believe you
find a way to make it work. If you have less than ideal people, you cut.
And look, the reality is, I think your point, which I agree with, and it's taken me some time to get there to some degree.
We had this argument.
We did, and I'm 6 inches of hair less, you know, at this time. But
literally.
But what happened was and I've tried to get this to get my hygiene to really realize this too. They can do 10 pro fees to produce $1,000.
And they can sell one crown.
Or one crown.
Yeah.
And so
you can save yourself $1,000 by printing your own aligners. Okay, which by the way costs you more than $1,000 to do it.
Let's just without even going down that road, just the raw savings of something is limiting.
It is. And then I would say to somebody, if you never want to have a dental business and you want to be by yourself and you just want to make an excellent save away.
Like if your goal is to make 300 grand a year,
not even it'll be 200 grand, 150, 200 grand, save away.
Then save it because
save what? That's practice optimization versus being practice growth.
Because let's say you're $1 million practice and you can save yourself 2% on supplies because you buy everything from China.
2% of a 7%. So your supply bill on $1 million practice on average is $70,000 a year.
Right.
Okay. So I can save 2% of my overall overhead. So you're saying I can save $15,000 to $20,000 a year.
Exactly.
I personally find that to be silly.
But my point is
to some degree. It's not that I don't value $15,000.
No.
It's not that at all. I'm Indian. I value $15,000, okay? More than probably most of the white people listening, okay?
But I kind of want that to mull a little bit. I don't want to proceed too soon because I want to make that so crystal clear to our listeners because that concept is if I work my ass off to spend hours and time and to buy products.
But I don't do it myself. I have my assistant do it.
But you're buying online. You're doing the stuff or whatever it is. You're taking all this effort to cut corners to save yourself $15,000 at best case.
$15,000-$20,000
saves you $15,000-$20,000 versus learning to implement a new procedure that could potentially have limitless.
Yeah, but some people have a hard time seeing that future.
Oh, I agree.
Okay. But let me put it to you another way, Sully, and this is how I look at it, okay? I look at it this way. As a leader, people around you take the cues of how they think from you. So if I'm focused on saving, and spending time on savings, I'm culturally teaching my team not to focus on growth, but instead to focus on counting cotton rolls. Okay. And to me, there is an inherent danger if you have a long-term outlook on your practice. Hey, listen, if you're just trying to bump the numbers to sell, go for it. Okay. But if you truly have a long-term,
you want a sustainable outlook, long-term business,
which is that's
profitable,
which is what I believe in.
Yeah.
Well, I don't even want to say profitable. Let's say I want a sustainable long-term business that makes me happy.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, I mean, then that's not where you should be focused. So, I had an argument recently, or a discussion, let's say, with someone on Facebook, Fakebook, as my wife likes to call it, and their argument to me was the reason that dentists should be insourcing is because they don't have the volume, and that once they create the volume, then they should outsource. And I said, that is the absolute dumbest business model I've ever seen in my life. Okay. The truth is if you're only doing a few of something, you're way better off outsourcing that and letting somebody else do it that knows what they're doing, that knows how to do it, and focus on growing those number of procedures. And when you hit critical mass, that is when you should insource.
So for the solo doctor that's at 1.4 and doesn't have an associate, that's when they could be a little more, taking a look at.
Well, I'm being more specific to printing guides and printing aligners. Okay. And look, the technology's there. It works. All of those things.
But yeah, there's other procedures too. I mean,
that's what I know. Okay. But my point in that.
No, I'm saying there's other things other than printing that are like this. I mean, it could be
milling. And I'm a big fan of CEREC. Okay. So let's turn this conversation around.
Yeah.
Okay. Should you print your own crowns if you're doing one a month? Should you mill your own crowns if you're doing one a month?
No.
When do we tell people they're ready to mill their own crowns?
When it cash flows?
Well, no. Well, but the cash flow is when they're doing 15 to, 12 to 20 a month, or 15 to 20 a month. So the same, we're letting people mislead us because I don't want to go down this road because it's not nice, but we're letting people mislead us or misguide us in a certain sense based on their personal preferences and not business fundamentals. Okay. No one in their right mind would tell you that you should mill your own crowns if you're only doing three a month. Okay. So if you're doing three aligner cases a month, no one in their right mind should tell you to print your own. No one.
It's also really hard to get efficient at something that you only do three times a month.
You know when you should print your own aligners? When you're doing 20 cases a month or 10 cases a month or 50, whatever the number is. Because then you're at critical mass. In fact, you can afford at that point to quote unquote hire your own person to do that full time.
Yeah.
Okay. So to me, I think this, and I see it so often in your generation. I just see it rampant in your generation.
We like the flashy new things.
Well, and not even that. It's just this concept of, I can do it myself. And the answer is yes, you can. But what is the lost opportunity cost of doing that? Because if you believe in the mindset that I have, that we're trying to build a business, then your energy, your focus should be building a practice that can sustain two doctors. Because I'm telling you this very clearly from personal experience, that when we got to two doctors, my world changed. My world changed.
But I would say the same thing, I'm sure.
I mean, it changed. I made more. I worked less. I did more of what I wanted to do. I had flexibility to focus on my passion, and my passion is educating and teaching. People often ask me all the time, how do you find time to do everything you do? I say, I don't work like you. I work 3 days a week, 40 weeks a year, not even 40, like 35 weeks a year. I took 15 weeks of off last year. 15 weeks, not including holidays. You know, and I'm not saying that to brag. I'm just saying that this is what's possible. And I didn't get there by printing my own aligners and printing my own guides. Yeah. Okay. I got there by focusing on doing more of the procedures, creating an environment and a culture to do more procedures. And when it made business sense to bring that inside, I bought a CEREC machine. When it made business sense to mill my own guides, we milled our own guides. When it makes business sense to make my own aligners, I'll make my own. I'll be first in line to say, make your own aligners when you're doing this many cases. Okay. So I think there's a lot of lack of sustainability in some of these models. And to me, it's important for people to understand that if you run like a business, then you don't insource until it's sustainable.
Well, and I think, like as you said, at the core of what the problem with the insource DIY mentality is, it teaches the wrong mindset of growth versus savings.
I just have my $10 assistant doing it. Well, there's a reason you got a $10 assistant,
and that's a systemic problem.
Yeah, of course, that's a culture issue.
Yes,
I can tell you that practice has a. I'm not going to say they'll never get somewhere, but they have a much lower chance of getting somewhere that they want to be. Now, some people are tinkerers and they love that. Be that.
Well, and that's it does. It does come back to, respectfully, it does come back to what people's goals and mindset and what they want to do. And some people enjoy the tinkering and the engineering.
And that comes back to why I'm here in Nashville, because I'm here to get clarity about what I want to be in 2019.
What we do not want to hear from people is that we are printing guides, we're printing aligners, or we are trying to save X amount of dollars doing this, that, or we're buying cheap things, or we're not, or, you know, we're buying whatever, you know, $50 crowns.
And then don't say, how do I grow my practice?
And then exactly. And then don't make a comment about, I'm struggling with practice growth, or how can I produce,
you know. Then they're going to say, how do I get more new patients? I'm like, oh my God, you don't need more new patients. I'm convinced the practice that has 2,000 active patients doesn't need more patients. They can double.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's all where they are on the scale. Yeah. I mean,
let's take our mastermind people, for example.
Yeah.
How much opportunity do we see when we reviewed those 12 charts?
Stupid money.
Stupid opportunity, right? If I can get them in place, every one of them should have an associate after a year.
Yeah.
If I can mentally get them. Our buddy we had lunch with yesterday needs one right now. He just doesn't understand it.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right.
You know, and it will change their life.
Yeah, 100%.
I love it when people say to me, I want to do more implants, but I'm busy. Well, it just doesn't add up.
Yeah.
No, you willing to work more hours? No, of course not. It just doesn't.
Something has to give.
Something has to give, right? You know.
That's a good point.
Let's talk about my failure, Sully. I want to share with people where I failed in life.
Okay. Where are we at here? I'm just trying to check our time here.
I have no earthly idea.
We're going to have to do this on another episode.
Okay. No problem.
We got to get my wife dinner. You need to meet her.
Okay.
That's important for everything.
Okay.
And then we can, after dinner, we can record another episode.
Whatever you say. I just show up here.
Because I do want to talk about that. But thank you everybody for joining the podcast. This is kind of like this was like a fireside chat. Really what this was, just okay, kind of
whatever you want to call it,
tune in to a discussion with myself and T-Bone here. All right, buddy, we'll talk soon. Work smarter, not harder.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.